Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University, with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School and the clinic director at the Premier Center in Santa Monica, where he treats many famous names in Hollywood under nationally recognized Premier Labs owner and CEO Dr. Robert Marshall. Got a health question? Ask Dr. Medici live today on Straight Talk on Health. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. I am Dr. Vincent Medici. This is one of the most favorite things I do each week. 1 hour where I get to, in a sense, pray and meditate with you, my wonderful audience who needs education. The more I do this, and it's been a year, the more I am totally committed to the understanding that the flaw, the mistake we're making, is we're not treating the public or giving them their due educationally. We ought to have schools. Schools in every neighborhood where people gather and get the inside track on medicine and how to stay healthy. And this is what I'm trying to do, and we'll talk about that later. But today's show, if you're under the age of 18, and if you're sensitive to graphic description, I don't think you should do this show. We're going to talk about men today, a topic I wanted to wait to get to, and that's the male prostate gland. This is the gland of ignorance. And yet it is the number two cancer for men, at least as late as 2011. We get 250,000 diagnoses a year. It is second only to lung cancer for men. And I think after I lay out the paradigm today, you're going to see all the things you can do to keep that prostate healthy. And that's the key. Change the environment. So if you're sensitive to graphic description, don't listen to the show today. If you're under the age of 18, don't listen to the show today. You're not going to read this in books. You're not going to hear this in common day lectures, because it's an integration of medicine. It's an utilization of medical facts. It's something I've put together for you that I think is going to tempt your common sense. And that's what I depend on in you, my audience, your common sense. I assure you, if you study the evolution of science, the evolution of medicine, the evolution of democracy, you're going to see it's common sense ultimately that rules. Dogma, paradigms, etc., they die off, usually after the progenitors of a new idea die off. But the point is, in the end, it's common sense and the public will that will determine the courses that we take. So let's talk about the prostate gland. First of all, where is it? Have you ever touched yours? Do you know what it does? If the answer to those three questions is no, not really, we lose already. How do you take advice about something up to the point of prostatectomy, meaning having it cut off or killed, radiation pellets, given doses of Lupron, Flomax? How can it possibly keep you up at night when it's hypertrophied, that's BPH, benign prostatic hypertrophy, when you don't know where it is, you don't know what it does, and you don't know how to take care of it? So, first of all, what is it? It's a muscular walnut. And if you did, and we'll talk about this later, go in about 3 inches into the male rectum and press downward. Now, this is second nature for me and others, but for most people, you have no idea where this gland even is. If you went 3 inches into the anus and downward towards the perineum, you're going to feel a walnut, a little lump in there. That little lump should be about the size of a walnut. That little lump has a vital role. in what makes the sperm white. What makes your sperm, gentlemen, white and sticky is a fluid that the prostate gland produces. So this big walnut of a gland with your urethra, that which the urine comes through, this little tiny hose running right through the center of this walnut-shaped gland, has openings into the passageway. So we say that from your urinary bladder, where you hold your urine, comes a tube, and that tube goes through the center of this walnut. And into, this is fascinating, into the very same tube that your urine flows, into the very same tube passageway, urethra, the prostatic urethra. From the center of this tube, out through a tube, down the shaft of the penis, and out into the toilet, comes your urine. From the bladder, into the urethra, through the prostatic urethra, through the belly of that prostate, and right out the shaft of the penis, into the toilet, goes your urine. But when you ejaculate, when you release sperm, obviously you don't urinate and release sperm simultaneously. My God, I'd hope not. The body designed a system so that even though it uses the same tube through the center of that walnut-shaped prostate, located about 3 inches, 4 inches into the rectum and pressing down towards the perineum, crotch, pardon the crudeness of that word, but some people understand that better. You go in about 3 inches, point down. It feels like a walnut. In the center of that walnut is an extension of the bladder through what we call the prostatic urethra and then out the shaft of the penis. So you got the anatomy down. Now, when you ejaculate, valves shut off the flow of urine. So when you ejaculate, when the sperm comes out, you cannot urinate simultaneously because there are valves up in the bladder that shut off. And those valves don't let you urinate, so you can ejaculate. Now, in the center of that tube going down through the center of the prostate are these little holes. They're called the prostatic utricles. And those little holes squirt this white fluid. And that white fluid, we understand, is sperm. The contribution that the prostate gland makes to this sperm is the whiteness of it and the stickiness of it. And then there are other parts of your genital anatomy, your seminal vesicle, that produces a lot of fructose and vitamin C to nourish the sperm. And per ejaculation, you may have 200 to hopefully 400 million sperm per ejaculation. And we're not going to go in that direction today. But what the prostate is doing, why we have the gland, is that it makes the sperm healthy. It's also part of a neurology, of a neuroanatomy that helps you maintain and enjoy an erection. And this is the problem with the prostatectomies. We tamper with those nerves. Sometimes we inadvertently, or we just don't have a choice. We end up cutting those nerves, and that's the issue with sexual function after this gland comes out. But once that gland is big, meaning it's not cancerous, it's just hypertrophied, and that happens to tons of men. Once it's very large, it interferes with sexual function. Once that gland is infected, prostatic prostatitis, a chronic prostatitis. Once that gland's infected, it interferes with sexual function. So from prostate cancer when it gets cut out or it's radiated, to benign prostatic hypertrophy when that gland enlarges, and we'll get into the consequences of that, and whether it's just prostatitis, a chronic low-grade infection. You do the antibiotic, it gets better, but then it comes back, but now the antibiotic doesn't work, so you kind of live with it. You're kind of infected, but you're not infected, but oops, what happened to sexual function? Okay, so you've got this little holes in the center of that prostatic urethra, and it produces this white sticky fluid. That's what the prostate does. Now you got it. Now you know what the prostate does. Next issue. What happens to that prostate? What is that prostate subject to? How do you degenerate that environment leading to a cancer, a hypertrophy, a prostatitis, poor sexual function? I want to harp on something today. It's called the reason that we're often given for why we've got what we've got. We call it genetic. You go to a doctor, you've got a cancer. You ask the doctor, how could this be? I thought I had a healthy lifestyle. Why me? Then the doctor says, well, it's in the genes. And this is the proverbial answer. In the end, as you trace the reasons to the reasons to the reasons to the reasons, you come to the wall. And that wall is, look, buddy, this is genetic. It's in your family. This is what happens. Finally, the genes break down and you get what you get. I'm going to harp on this today because it's only part of the perception. It's a myopic part. It's a part that leaves you powerless. It's what you're told that effectively means there's nothing you can do but grin and bear it. And we do not accept that, do we? Well, you know, for many years we had to lean upon our good conscience, our common sense, our sense of autonomy, our sense of self-worth when we turned and said, you know, I'm not going to accept that. There must be something controlling this. It's not simply genetic. Well, the truth now is, up at about 10 years ago, we developed a whole new field in science to prove to us that we were right originally. It's called epigenetics. It's a concept that says that your genes express in reference to all these satellite genes that have to be switched on or off. And if those satellite genes say go, then the main gene goes. That's a simplified version, but the point is, genetic isn't so fixed. Genetics is not black and white. Genetics is infinitely malleable. In fact, DNA, okay, is a torsion spring. DNA, and we're going to prove this beyond repute over this next century, DNA is basically just a wave of light. Right, it's a particle and a wave. DNA is probably the most pure, essential expression of photonic energy in the body. DNA, we would say, is torsional. Check out Dr. Len Horowitz. He's a dentist with other degrees in public health. He's been saying this for 20 years. It's Dr. Leonard Horowitz. DNA is torsional. It effectively means you do not accept the diagnosis or the prognosis or the counsel that, look, buddy, it's in your genes. Now, do genes have an influence? Of course they do. It would be absurd to say otherwise. It would be wrong. It's too much the other direction, right? Why is it so hard for people to see it down the middle? You know, we have Democrats and we have Republicans. We can't have a third party, not a potent third party, because you're either one or the other. Life doesn't work that way. Everybody knows that. But if you look at how we function, we're always split. Where's the common sense? At coffee tables, we agree. It's the hybridized view, and this applies. Genetic means you have a tendency, a slant. So if you get BPH and your friend down the street didn't, you might have a tendency, or prostate cancer, a tendency. But the field of epigenetics now, that's a new field, and this is not to be disputed. Now, I'm going to translate epigenetics into a model that you can understand. And then I'm going to translate that model into the prostate gland. And you're going to see how medicine should really function. Yes, you are. So, when we talk about the prostate gland, what we have to talk about is not your genetic tendency. We have to talk about your terrain, your environment. What environment does that prostate gland sit in, live in, bathe in, expunge itself in, cathart in, move in, or not move in? What environment, if we all shrunk ourselves down? Remember that film in the 60s with Raquel Welch, where everybody got shrunk down to like microns and they were in the...